From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
As the judicial system puts the brakes on Florida's Stop Woke Act, Governor DeSantis insists the whole thing was taken out of context.
You know, to just show up and object to every single book under the sun, that is not an appropriate situation here.
Also this week, some institutions, however, including the state's flagship university, are keeping at least some of the anti-woke agenda in place.
You know, that was my community. That was a group of people that, like, didn't feel like this university was supporting them.
We'll also talk about the concept of fetal personhood and the new ban against local governments in Florida issuing identification documents. I'm Tom Flanagan. Online and on air, this is Capitol Report and the end-of-week wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee. In Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis' self-declared war on woke appears to be sputtering. In recent months, courts have put on pause laws that attempt to stop certain discussions on race, history, gender, and sex in public education and private businesses. The latest decision, a settlement agreement stipulating that Florida teachers and public school students can discuss their gender identity and sexual orientation at school, but not teach about it. As Lynn Hatter reports, some DeSantis and GOP critics see all of this as a sign that the war on woke may be coming to an end.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis launched his war on woke in 2021 in front of a packed audience in an auditorium.
No taxpayer dollars should be used to teach our kids to hate our country or to hate each other.
Now, many of the policies he sought to implement, like his so-named Stop Woke Act, are breaking down in the courts. The Stop Woke Act put a target on ideas like diversity, equity, and inclusion, and critical race theory. CRT, as it's called, is an academic framework that posits some laws have disproportionate impacts on people of color. Last year, courts said that the state could not enforce the Stop Woke Act in higher education, calling the measure, quote, positively dystopian. And earlier this month, the court again ruled that the state could not enforce its own ideology on private businesses, in a move PennAmerica Florida Director Katie Blankenship praised.
The 11th Circuit said this bill is rampant with viewpoint discrimination. That will doom this bill in any space, and that is excellent news for Floridians because this bill never should have been passed in the first place.
PennAmerica is a free speech rights group. Recently, the DeSantis administration and LGBTQ advocates reached a settlement on another anti-woke bill. The measure attempted to stop public schools from discussing or teaching about gender identity and sexual orientation in grades kindergarten through third. A state education board built on it by extending the ban to all grade levels last year. The plan also had a chilling effect on LGBTQ clubs. Under the settlement, parents and students can talk about their gender identity and sexual orientation, and there can be LGBTQ clubs, but schools still cannot instruct on the topic, and the law itself stands. The decision has both sides declaring a victory. But Carlos Guillermo Smith, a former state lawmaker and the political director of Equality Florida, believes LGBTQ organizations are the clear winner.
Piece by piece, Ron DeSantis' agenda of censorship and control is being dismantled brick by brick.
During the most recent legislative session, Republican lawmakers and the governor himself also attempted to walk back other policies that were part of the original anti-woke agenda. One of them was an effort to get rid of certain books in public schools that the state says were obscene and graphic. But DeSantis himself admitted that those efforts have gone too far, with other books considered literary classics also getting caught up in the purge.
We like people wanting to be involved in what's going on. You know, to just show up and object to every single book under the sun, that is not an appropriate situation here. And we've seen that occasionally.
To curb school book challenges, the state is likely to implement a payment when certain people file too many. Still, the agenda has not been completely dismantled. Florida's public liberal arts college, the New College of Florida, had its governance drastically overhauled amid complaints the school had become too left-leaning. And several public universities, like the University of Florida and Florida State University, have dismantled their DEI offices. Also catching flack in the courts, a plan that would have stopped children from attending drag shows, and another that banned gender-affirming care for minors. For Equality Florida's Carlos Guillermo Smith, the damage has already been done.
That led to the removal of library books that included LGBTQ people, censorship of classroom discussions about our existence, and the exodus of teachers from the profession, both gay and straight.
Some observers say there is still more to come. They note that this is an election year, and lawmakers rarely take up highly contentious issues during this time. DeSantis also has 2 years remaining in his term as governor, and some proposals that failed in the legislature this year are likely to come back next year. I'm Len Hatter.
Students at the University of Florida say they've lost valuable mentorship and resources now that the school has eliminated its diversity, equity, and inclusion staff. The layoffs happened earlier this month in compliance with state regulations that prevent federal dollars from being spent on DEI. WUFT's Anya Pinello has more.
Jacob Fazio is a senior at the University of Florida. He says when the school laid off its chief diversity officer, Dr. Marsha McGriff, earlier this month, he lost a mentor.
I just feel this immense frustration.
On March 1st, the University of Florida sent out a memo announcing it was closing the office of the chief diversity officer, eliminating 13 DEI positions and 15 administrative appointments, and terminating its DEI contracts with outside vendors. The memo says this was done in compliance with the Board of Governors regulation that was passed in January, which prevents public money from being spent on DEI. Hours after the memo went out, Governor Ron DeSantis posted on social media platform X, saying, quote, DEI is toxic and has no place in our public universities. I'm glad that Florida was the first state to eliminate DEI, and I hope more states follow suit, unquote. For Fazio, who identifies as queer, growing up in rural Florida and attending schools without DEI initiatives was rough.
I came from the Florida Panhandle, a place where diversity, equity, and inclusion has never been a part of my school curriculum.
He says he never had a teacher or staff member who made him feel accepted for who he was.
Resources didn't come to my benefit. I didn't have administration. I didn't have a chief diversity officer to tell me that, you know, like, I was okay to be myself and pursue the things I wanted to do.
Until he came to UF and met Dr. McGriff.
I remember being wowed by her leadership then, and ever since I've been able to build a personal and professional relationship with her as like a mentor.
Fazio is actively involved with the university's LGBTQ community. Last spring, he conducted a student-led survey and found that out of 320 student responses, 32% felt unsafe on campus because of their sexual orientation, and 58% didn't feel like the university adequately supported the LGBTQ community.
I had to kind of pour my heart out to Dr. McGriff about how I was feeling and how distraught I was over those results and how at a loss I was. Because, you know, that was my community. That was a group of people that like didn't feel like this university was supporting them. And she was that first person to give me a plan of action to make it better.
With the DEI positions gone, it'll be left to affinity and student groups that don't receive state funding to fill in the gaps.
I think we can get pretty close. Building community on our own has been something that minorities have had to do for a long time.
Cassie Urbans is a graduate student at UF and serves as the communications co-chair for Graduate Assistance United. While she says student groups can fill in some of the gaps, she says not having an experienced staff member to bounce ideas off of or to get a second opinion from will hurt their ability to be as effective as possible.
And there's going to be a really huge loss of institutional knowledge because as students, we're only really going to be at the university for 4 years, maybe five.
According to the memo, the university had $5 million earmarked for DEI, which will now go to a fund to recruit faculty. Denia Wright is a law professor at UF and chair of the Faculty Senate. She says while this may sound like a lot of money, it's really not.
It's such a drop in the bucket. Like, who cares, right? I mean, right, $5 million, it sounds like a lot of money. It's like less than 1% of our budget.
Especially when it comes to getting people to move to Florida.
So I'll tell you right now, it's kind of hard to recruit faculty.
Those who've been laid off will receive 12 weeks pay and have until April 19th to apply for other positions at the university and have their applications fast-tracked. I'm Onya Pinello.
Coming up on Capitol Report, during recent arguments on abortion before the state Supreme Court, the Chief Justice has brought up the idea of fetal personhood.
Chief Justice Muniz is all but like writing up an engraved invitation to make this argument to the Florida Supreme Court.
Governor DeSantis signs into law a bill to prevent undocumented immigrants from using local IDs to misrepresent their immigration status.
The most likely scenario is you will be stopped and you will be returned to your country of origin.
State lawmakers kept up their drive to take more and more authority from local governments during the session that just ended.
There's been somewhat of, a weaponization of government to prevent these properties from operating as vacation rentals.
And a proposed state land purchase has some residents of a rural North Florida county upset.
Anybody that tries to stand in the way of that is going to have to go through a big crowd of people around here.
After an Alabama Supreme Court ruling in a wrongful death case raised questions around access to in vitro fertilization, Florida lawmakers pressed pause on a bill that would have added fetuses to the state's wrongful death law. But as Regan McCarthy reports, experts say that's likely just the beginning. They say efforts to add fetal rights to state laws is part of a decades-long effort to recognize fetal personhood nationwide.
Yes on four! Yes on four! Let the voters vote! Let the voters vote!
On the steps of the Florida Supreme Court in early February, advocates both for and against abortion access are chanting, waving signs, and praying.
Ave Maria!
And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us.
The justices had just heard arguments over the ballot language for a proposed state constitutional amendment that would explicitly protect access to abortion. State House Minority Leader Fintress Driscoll says the Chief Justice brought up a surprising question.
The Chief Justice really seemed to be trained on trying to understand what the effects of this ballot initiative would be on other areas of the law if it were to pass.
Specifically, Chief Justice Carlos Muniz wanted to know how the amendment might interact with Article 1 of Florida's Constitution, which grants, quote, all natural persons the inalienable right to life.
I don't know that I could kind of affirmatively say that the term, you know, natural person doesn't, as a matter of just sort of ordinary meaning, include the unborn.
This isn't the first time Muniz has made similar comments.
Chief Justice Muniz is all but like writing up an engraved invitation to make this argument to the Florida Supreme Court.
Mary Ziegler is a law professor at UC Davis. She says it remains to be seen whether Muniz's questions about fetal personhood will impact how the court rules on the pending state amendment to protect abortion access. But, she says,
this question of fetal personhood isn't going anywhere.
Ziegler says for decades, the anti-abortion movement has been working to put laws on the books across the country that extend rights to fetuses, like fetal homicide, wrongful death, and child support during pregnancy.
The idea was to go to sympathetic judges like those on the Florida State Supreme Court and say, isn't it weird that a fetus isn't a rights holder for the purposes of the state constitution or the purposes of abortion law, but is in all these other contexts?
Ziegler says if states like Alabama and Florida recognize fetuses as people in their laws and constitutions, that helps set the dominoes for an argument on the national level.
The more states pass laws recognizing a fetus as a rights holder in a variety of contexts, the more you're going to see the anti-abortion movement wanting return to the U.S. Supreme Court and saying, well, actually, under the 14th Amendment of the federal constitution, a fetus is also a rights holder.
Ziegler says that could potentially cut off access to abortion nationwide, as opposed to abortion being left up to the states after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Florida Republican lawmakers recently considered a bill that would have let parents collect damages in civil suits for the loss of a pregnancy. While the bill's sponsor said the measure had nothing to do with abortion, advocates on both sides of the issue disagreed.
As the cliche goes, I'm going to say the quiet part out loud.
Andrew Sherville is founder of the group Florida Voice for the Unborn.
It's another reaffirmation that unborn children should be considered nothing less than human persons under our state laws and our state constitution.
Opponents worried the measure could cut off access to reproductive health care, including abortion and IVF. even though the measure included a definition for the term unborn child that specified it must be in the womb. Shortly after the Alabama ruling, the sponsor of Florida's bill said she wanted more time to be sure lawmakers, quote, got the policy right. Florida State Senate Minority Leader Lauren Book hopes new attention on such legislation could spell the end for the push for fetal personhood.
People across the country are talking about it. People are finally looking at it. And at the end of the day, I think that the Republicans across the country realize this is a problem. This isn't something that they should be doing.
But already, Republican legislative leaders here in Florida plan to revisit the issue next year. I'm Regan McCarthy in Tallahassee.
Governor Ron DeSantis has signed a bill banning undocumented immigrants from obtaining any form of ID. Tristan Wood reports the move is part of the latest migrant crackdown from the governor as Florida faces a potential wave of refugees from Haiti.
Standing in front of a podium decorated with a poster reading, Stop Illegal Immigration, DeSantis signed a host of bills meant to continue the undocumented immigrant crackdown that has been a priority since he took office. Along with a bill banning local and state government from recognizing any photo ID from undocumented individuals, he also signed bills increasing criminal penalties for people who commit crimes after returning from being deported, and for those who drive without a license.
We were one of the weaker states with respect to illegal immigration. Since we've come in, we've done things like ban sanctuary cities throughout the state of Florida. Those were legal in this state prior to me taking office.
The governor has mobilized state resources to keep Haitian migrants looking to escape violence in their country from landing in Florida. He says the state has already stopped a boat carrying 25 undocumented migrants.
The last thing you should want to do is get on some boat and think you're going to come through from any of these islands to get to the state of Florida. The most likely scenario is you will be stopped and you will be returned to your country of origin. So it's a hazardous journey. It's not worth doing.
DeSantis held the press conference in Winter Haven alongside notoriously tough-on-crime Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd. He has become a minor right-wing celebrity for his hard-line positions on immigration.
Folks, they're coming here not just to find a better way of life, like many of our forefathers did, but they're coming here to kill our people while they make enormous profits.
Judd says undocumented immigrants are looking to bring drugs like fentanyl into the country. According to the United States Sentencing Commission, 86% of those sentenced for trafficking the drug are Americans. I'm Tristan Wood.
The 2024 Florida legislature passed a number of bills that would take away authority from local governments. Known as preemption bills, they were cleared for issues ranging from local wages to vacation rentals to affordable housing. And as Margie Menzel reports, some of those that failed this year will likely be back next year.
Over the last probably 6 or 7 years, it's not been a good year for home rule.
That's Jeff Sharkey, president of Capital Alliance Group. He represents Leon County government, so it's his job to push back on preemption bills. Florida lawmakers filed about 1,900 bills this year, and roughly 325 bills passed.
One out of 20 of those 1,900 bills were preemption bills. So you can imagine it's a constant battle with local government advocates, city officials, county officials, Florida Association of Counties, Florida League of Cities, trying to manage that kind of onslaught of preemption bills.
One of the most controversial is House Bill 433, which would prevent local governments from putting requirements on contractors about wages and heat exposure protections for workers. Republican House sponsor Tiffany Esposito of Fort Myers and other supporters said the proposal would save taxpayer money and that businesses should be able to determine the wages of workers. Sharkey disputes that.
But there wasn't, to my knowledge, one piece of evidence or ordinance that showed that it had a dramatically adverse impact on businesses. I mean, you talk about roofers, you talk about, you know, construction companies, you talk about, you know, landscaping. This is hot in the summer, and it's not getting any warmer, cooler.
A related measure by Republican Representative Jason Schoaf of Port St. Joe would override existing city and county ordinances that impose hiring preferences on local public works projects. In debate on the Senate floor, Democratic Senator Jason Pizzo said Broward County, part of which he represents, has a program to subsidize some workers' wages so they can qualify for benefits.
Anything in this bill, if passed and signed into law, that would prohibit a place like Broward County from offering that hourly subsidy.
Republican Senator Jay Trumbull of Panama City in response.
Senator Pizzo, not fully understanding the nuances within Broward, but there's nothing in this bill that would prohibit Broward from giving a gift of some dollar amount to, you know, a particular industry or vendor, is my understanding.
Another successful preemption bill deals with vacation rentals. Sharkey says there are hundreds of thousands of these in Florida now, and lawmakers have tried for years to address them. Some see them as extra income for property owners, others as party houses with no accountability. Senate Bill 280 by Republican Senator Nick DeSigley of Pinellas County would preempt the regulation of vacation rentals to the state. Here's DeSigley.
There's been somewhat of, a weaponization of government to prevent these properties from operating as vacation rentals. And I think that this bill is going to address those concerns.
Also passing, a ban on public sleeping, new requirements for food delivery platforms and electric vehicle charging stations, and the uniform handling of complaints against law enforcement. Other preemption bills failed, including a measure that would have capped transfers from a city or county's municipal utility to its general fund, and a move to ban the removal of historic monuments that had been in place at least 25 years. Republican Senator Blaise Ingolia of Spring Hill fought for term limits for county commissioners, but ultimately the House and Senate couldn't agree.
Yeah, we'll continue working on this bill. I mean, we still have a way to go. We still have the House to reconcile with.
Sharkey expects some of these proposals and others to come back in the next legislative session. I'm Margie Menzel.
Managers of Florida's retirement system pension fund are making plans to drop investments in China-owned companies. Gina Jordan reports they have some time to complete the move under legislation unanimously passed by the State House and Senate.
A legislative staff analysis of the bill, sponsored by Hialeah Gardens Republican Senator Brian Avila, says China has been subject to various U.S. sanctions due to human rights abuses, cyber attacks, and much more.
You're starting to see a lot of companies sort of disengage as much as possible from, any sort of interest in China.
Sometimes a really good investment is a really good investment.
During floor debate, Hollywood Democratic Senator Jason Pizzo said he would vote for the bill, but...
What I'm loathsome of is to engage in voting on something when we are literally, we have our hands, our eyes, our fingers, and our pockets into absolute hypocrisy here. Your watch, your phone, your laptop, state business is conducted and spent on those same products. This is one of those sort of messages about it. Half of this room has personal investments in foreign companies. The public can see that. But we go ahead and legislate and say what our pension fund can and can't do.
The News Service of Florida reports the state's investments were worth over $225 billion as of mid-February. The Florida Retirement System pension plan accounts for the vast majority of those assets. A week after the bill passed, the State Board of Administration's interim executive director, Lamar Taylor, updated his agency's Investment Advisory Council.
It'll prohibit us from acquiring additional Chinese state-owned entities and will require us to divest of Chinese state-owned entities in about a year and a half. So September 1 of 2025, the SBA is required to be completely divested of its exposure to Chinese state-owned entities. I will tell you this, it's not a lot. The exposure is not very high for a number of reasons, but it is something that we will implement.
Taylor says the amount to be divested is under $300 million. Managers will target companies with more than 50% ownership by the Chinese government. The bill is the latest effort by state leaders to cut economic ties with China and other so-called countries of concern. Similar investment bans are in place for some of those countries, including Cuba, Iran, and Venezuela. I'm Gina Jordan.
Legislation unanimously passed by the Florida legislature this session would require public warnings to be issued within 24 hours if beach waters or other public bathing areas don't meet Florida Department of Health quality standards. Sewage spills, leaking septic tanks, and other pollutants can make water unsafe and lead to illness. And right now, the Department of Health is authorized to, but not required to, enforce rules to protect the health and safety of those using public waters in the state. Under the bill, beaches would be required to close if they fail to meet water quality standards. State Senator Lori Berman was the bill's sponsor.
It does seem common sense, but we've had a lot of spills in the last few years that have not been addressed within 24 hours. And these are really dangerous situations. When you have this bacteria in the water, people can get sick, and we want to make sure to prevent that.
If signed into law by Governor Ron DeSantis, the measure would take effect July 1st. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, Florida lawmakers are planning to buy more than 220 acres of land in Wakulla County. As Adrian Andrews tells us, the governor still needs to sign off on the purchase, but it's being called a huge win for Florida's environment.
Last summer, there were hundreds of state environmentalists and local Wakulla citizens voicing concerns for a piece of land in the county being eyed for a gas station. The property stretches 225 acres and sits 14 miles south of Florida's capital city. That land is home to the largest underwater cave system in the United States, and Gil Damon, a Wakulla native and environmentalist, says the cave feeds Wakulla's natural spring, one of the state's most prized resources.
I mean, if you grow up here and you hunt and you fish and you swim at Wakulla Springs, you go on the boat tour, it's you. It becomes you. And anybody that tries to stand in the way of that is going to have to go through a big crowd of people around here.
Residents did just that. Last summer, during a local commission meeting, Wakulla residents yelled and booed in protest about a proposal that would have allowed an oil company to build a 16-pump gas station on the property.
This meeting is already out of control, and we're going to have to get it back in control so we can continue.
Residents argued that oil could leak into the underground cave system, putting Wakulla Springs at risk. After several months of chatter and failed attempts to rezone the land, state Republican Representative Jason Shoaf of Port St. Joe stepped in.
With there being a cave system underneath this property and it being an artery right into Wakulla Springs, it just seemed a good match to protect that property.
Shoaf was able to secure $3.7 million in the state budget to go toward the purchasing and preserving the property through the state's Land Trust Program, Conservation Florida. Shoaf says the new allocation is a step towards protecting Florida's ecosystem and gives residents a chance to learn more about Wakulla Springs.
In my book, it's a win-win for everyone involved, and I would even love to see it go a step further and either put a welcome center there or let a nonprofit run it to where we can educate the public on these underground water systems.
Still, it's not a done deal yet. Governor Ron DeSantis must first sign off on the expenditure. I'm Adrian Andrews.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Anya Pinello. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Evan Rossi, and I'm Tom Flanagan. We hope you'll join us again next week on air and online for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.